Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Later on, we're going to be joined by Braden Montgomery. We've kind of made a habit lately of having some of the best draft prospects in the land on the show, some of the hottest hitters on earth on the show. And Braden Montgomery certainly checks off the boxes there, and his team, Texas A&M, currently the number one team in the nation. So we'll talk to Braden in just a bit. Before we do that, we're going to talk about some prospects who are off to hot starts with the season underway. We'll focus on some guys in the big leagues off to hot starts, some guys in the minor leagues off to hot starts, a couple guys in between who've just been called up. Jack Leiter, Andy Páez, talk about them a little bit. And then Jonathan has just returned from his trip to Cary, North Carolina, and the National High School Invitational, USA Baseball National High School Invitational. So as much as we talk about college draft prospects on the show, we're going to give a little shine to the high schoolers. And we'll probably wrap up with a question from the mailbag. What do you guys think?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Do something.
Yeah. All right. So what are we, 2 weeks into the season? Two weeks into the big league season, a week or two into the minor league season, depending on the level. Everyone's underway now, though, and we're getting a chance to see these guys play. Long off season, we put out all of our rankings in January, February, March, and then it's always exciting when we actually get to see them play. Let's start off in the big leagues, why don't we? We will have our first rookie hot list of the year coming out this week. We're recording on Tuesday. That'll be out tonight, in fact. Well, the top two prospects in all of baseball are in the big leagues after Jackson Holliday got called up to join fellow Jackson Churio. Sneak peek at this list, they are not on it. But there is an Oriole at the top of it in Colt Kowser. A couple Cubs, one of whom I think you're going to talk about, Jim.
Well, I'm not going to tell you which one, though. I'm going to just
just talk about them. We'll have to guess whether you're talking about Joto Imanaga or Michael Bush. That should be difficult to discern.
Did you want me to start talking about? I thought you were going to keep reading the top five guys. I didn't know if you wanted me to jump in there or not.
Sure.
He teed you up. I mean, I thought he was going to read off the top five. I fumbled.
I thought you were going to read off the top five, and I just took the pitch.
I will.
I'm sorry.
Number four, Jackson Merrill. Who's been playing for a while because he got started in the Korea series. And then Evan Carter, who's been playing in the big leagues for even longer because he was up, obviously, last year. That's your top five. And now, Jim, would you like to talk about one of the Cubs, aforementioned Cubs?
I've got to figure out which one. Yeah,
starting right now, perhaps?
Yeah, I will talk about the one I guess he's no longer a prospect because he graduated up in day. But Michael Bush, I won't say I thought he was going to hit six homers in his first 16 games or homer in five straight. But just really not surprised he's performing well because he was one of the better hitters in the upper minors the last 2 years while he was in the Dodgers system, and he was just blocked with no place to really play in Los Angeles, especially with the offseason they went out signing Shohei Ohtani and Teoscar Hernandez and just kind of blocked him off everywhere he could have possibly played. But this guy has always hit for average. He's always hit for power. He's always drawn a healthy amount of walks. And I just thought it was a tremendous trade. You know, looking back, there was a time when people were saying that Jed Hoyer hadn't done enough to upgrade the Cubs. At that point, they hadn't re-signed Cody Bellinger, and they really needed left-handed bats in the lineup. And he was just a really nice fit for them. Of course, the Dodgers being the Dodgers extracted two non-40-man prospects from the Cubs, Jackson Ferris, really talented lefty, Zaire Hope, really athletic outfielder who's a sleeper in last year's draft. So I think it's a trade that could benefit both sides, but just not surprised at all that Michael Bush is able to hit in the big leagues because everything he did in the minor leagues indicated that he should be doing that. And I think, very good chance, he might be your National League Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to keep up his 60 homer pace, but I do think he's going to be productive all season long.
Okay. Let's continue down the list. Number 6, Mason Miller of the A's. Number 7, Max Meyer of the Marlins. Number 8, Mason Winn of the Cardinals. Number 9, Joey Ortiz of the Brewers. And number 10, Jared Jones of the Pirates. And Jonathan going to surprise us by not talking about a Pirate here, even though there's one on the board for him.
I'm not talking about a Pirate. I'm not talking about Colton Cowser at the top of the list either, the Orioles. I wanted to talk about Mason Miller, so I guess I am being a homer because he's from Pittsburgh. But yeah. It's just been fun to see what he's been able to do. You know, the A's, I think, smartly have him in the bullpen. He's always had closer stuff, but health has been, you know, an issue. And so far, really, really good. You know, he's picked up 3 saves. The A's are, you know, playing a little bit better baseball than I think people anticipated. Striking out almost 17 per 9. He's around the strike zone. The stuff has always been ridiculous. The fastball's been averaging over 100 miles per hour, but the slider has just been absolutely ridiculous. 8 strikeouts, and hitters have managed to just go 1-for-15 against his breaking ball. So as long as he stays healthy, you know, he may be the kind of guy that ends up figuring into a Rookie of the Year race just because he may be an all-star caliber closer when all is said and done.
Yeah, I got drawn in as a designated drafter in a fantasy league here, and I drafted Mason Miller for the person I was drafting for. He got hit in his first outing, gave up a couple runs on 3 hits and a walk, and then I went back and looked, and the person I drafted for dropped him.
I think you got to call out this person. 1 for making you draft their fantasy team, and 2 for their impatience. I want to know who this is.
I can't do it publicly.
Name names.
You have to put it in the Slack channel. You have to at least do that.
I will, but not. But I'm not doing it while you have a chance.
Too smart. Too smart.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. All right. Let's move on to the minor leagues. And
you can admit it, Jason. Were you drafting Rob Manfred's fantasy team for him?
I didn't. I did not. No.
Okay.
Minor leagues. Guys off to hot starts. We have not gotten to the point yet of doing a we do a monthly look at the hottest hitters in the minors. We have not done that yet, so there's no accompanying story here, but a quick glance at the total base leaders in the minors finds Joey Loperfido at the top, 10 home runs in 70 plate appearances for the Astros, number 5 prospect. Heston Kjerstad got off to that blistering start, has cooled a bit, but trails only Joey Loperfido in terms of total bases by ranked prospects with 47. And then comes Kobe Mayo, his Norfolk teammate. That Norfolk team, you know, we talked quite a bit about what an incredible lineup that was, with Jackson Holliday also there, Connor Norby, who is 5th among ranked prospects in total bases. And even without Jackson Holliday, that lineup's still quite stout. And hey, there's Andy Páez, who is 4th among all ranked prospects in total bases. And just this morning, as we're recording on Tuesday, got the call up to the Dodgers. And Jim, I hereby tee you up to talk about Andy Páez.
Can I talk about Joey Loperfido too? Can I do a 2-for here? Is that permissible?
Sure, I think so.
Okay.
I should let Jonathan answer since.
What difference does it make whether we say it's permissible? He's going to do what he wants.
Both those guys are very interesting to me. We'll talk about Andy Páez.
Go for it.
Andy Páez first. You guys know I've been an Andy Páez champion. Even the Dodgers tease me a little bit about my affinity for Andy Páez because I've been a big fan for a while, and his track record, you know, kind of like Michael Bush, it's pretty impeccable. You know, 3 full seasons in the minor leagues, you know, in full season leagues, he's led his league in extra base hits every time. Even when he had the worst year of his career in 2022, he led the Texas League, and he also ranked 3rd with 26 homers. You know, we saw him in the fall league at the end of that season. He'd gotten a little overly aggressive. He's always been aggressive, but he'd kind of tipped a little bit to the point where it was really affecting him at the plate and cutting his production somewhat. And last year he came out and he got more athletic. and he improved his approach, and he was tearing up double A and got to triple A, and then tore the labrum in his left shoulder during his first triple A game, and it ended his season prematurely last year. So he kind of slid out of the top 100, got, we didn't forget him, but got overlooked because he wasn't playing, and came back this year. You know, small sample size, of course, but he's hitting 371 in 15 games in AAA with five homers. And, you know, for a guy, he still is a free swinger, but he also is somewhat of a cerebral hitter at the same time. He understands his swing. He can make adjustments. It's huge raw power. It's huge arm strength. We'll see how much he plays for the Dodgers. Like, I do think that there are some outfield at-bats if they shift guys around. So very curious to see how he does. But he's basically hit for power from day one. And then kind of on the other end of the spectrum, you have Joey Loprofito, who is a – I don't know how many times we're going to do this with the Astros, guys. But, like, you know, went to Duke for 3 years, you know, started for him. He was an okay college player. You know, pandemic years, his draft year, goes undrafted. You know, comes back for his senior year at Duke, or I guess it would have been his COVID junior year, and has a big year. Tournament MVP at the ACC tournament, seventh round senior signs for $72,500, which is like a third of slot value. And, you know, promptly goes out and hits 116 in his brief pro debut. So you aren't thinking anything of him. And this guy, it's just talking to the Astros. He's one of these guys that if you tell him to do something, you ask him to do something, you show him how to get better at something, he just soaks it up and he can translate that into results. And he's gotten more athletic. He's got a better approach. He's got a better swing. He's gotten stronger. And now he's hitting the ball harder, driving it to all fields. He had a breakout year in 2022. He had an even better year in 2023. He was 25 homers, 27 steals last year. He draws walks. And, you know, not a guy that we've really seriously considered for the top 100, but off to a great start this year. And talking to the Astros, he was kind of their pick to click this year as guy, you know, the hitter in their system most likely to make a big league impact. Jose Abreu is, I guess he could be my new Tony Kemp punching bag now that Tony Kemp got DFA'd. Jose Abreu, who's really struggled in Houston, do not be surprised if Joey Loprofito winds up at first base or some combination of first base, outfield, DH, because he's off to a tremendous start with 10 homers leading the minor leagues. And I think this could be another Astros success story, like Chaz McCormick or Jacob Myers or whoever, of a guy who was an overlooked draft pick who winds up becoming a useful big league hitter for the Astros.
He is on Team Ratliff in the MLB Pipeline Total Bases pool.
Couldn't resist.
All right. So we didn't plan this, but we kind of divided things up here where Jim's talking solely about hitters and Jonathan. Oh, no, Jonathan, you do have a
hit. I talked about two hitters, and I wanted to take Jonathan's hitting talking spot away from him.
Don't put me in a box.
But we do have a couple of pitchers to talk about, but Jonathan, yeah, you want to talk about a guy who is off to a blistering start in the minor leagues as well, in Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Yeah, he's fascinating to me, the Twins' number three prospect, and some of it is because, you know, he'd been hurt over the last couple of years. You know, his first full season, he only played 47 games. Last year, he only played 99 games. And he showed glimpses, and the tools are really there. And what really stands out to me is when we put our top 100 together and we send it out for feedback, we got a lot of feedback that we needed to move him up the top 100 list. And, you know, he's now at number 40 overall. And you look at the numbers from the previous 2 years, and you're like, well, it's not like he's lit the world on fire. He's just shown glimpses. Now, it's only eight games in, but he's moved up to double A. He's only 21. He's got an OPS close to 1,600. You know, he's gone 10 for his first 26, and eight of those 10 hits have been for extra bases, including four homers. The approach has been really good. He draws a ton of walks. So it's kind of an exciting – it's exciting to see him break out of the gate doing what a lot of people in the scouting industry and in the Twins organization thought he might do. Now let's see if he can sustain it, but it's really exciting to see how he's begun the year in the Texas League with Wichita so far.
And Jim, you talked about Andy Pages, who just got the call up this morning and on the same day. Another player from another one of your organizations, Jack Leiter, gets the call. Maybe not the path that we'd expected for him, but nonetheless, here he is on the precipice of making his big league debut.
You know, and as we've mentioned with Wyatt Langford, he's doing it on teams defending World Series champion. I mean, it's, you know, they're in it to win it, and they think Jack Leiter can help them win. And, you know, definitely not the path we thought it was going to happen. You know, number two overall pick in the 2021 draft. The Rangers sent him to AA for his pro debut in 2022, and he spent most of last year there as well. And he kind of got lit up for 2 years in AA. You know, his stuff backed up, his control regressed. You know, that was kind of tied to some delivery issues where he's really athletic and he gets down the mound so quickly and it creates a lot of extension, but his timing just got out of whack. And his money pitch when he was at Vanderbilt was his fastball, which has good velocity, but what made it an overwhelming pitch at the amateur level was his ability to throw it up in the strike zone. It has tremendous induced vertical break, tremendous life, but in pro ball, he was having trouble locating it up in the zone. It's more metrics than true life. And when he didn't locate up in the zone, it got hammered. And he just really struggled to command it. His slider was his best pitch last year, but you know, his curveball regressed too. Anyway, they actually put him on the developmental list a couple times last year to work solely on his mechanics. He came back and made a Triple A start at the end of the year. They're trying to keep him more close to the plate. More closed and straighter to the plate, and they thought his stuff would play. Now, small sample size, obviously, because we're just at the start of this season, but he's made three AAA starts before his call-up, or three AAA outings. I guess one of them was a longer outing, not a start. 25 strikeouts, only three walks in 14 and a third innings. Hitters are only hitting 208 against him, and I took a quick look at Synergy, throwing 64% strikes with his fastball, 42% swing and miss on the fastball. That's how the fastball was playing at Vanderbilt. The slider has been getting a lot of swing and miss and throwing for a lot of strikes too, mixing in, you know, curveball and change up a little bit. But it's been basically fastball and slider. And again, it's only three starts, but this looks a lot more like the Jack Leiter that the Rangers drafted number two overall. And if he's anything close to that, it's pretty crazy that you win the World Series and you're going to incorporate Jack Leiter and Wyatt Langford into your, you know, into your big league club in April. Those two guys could give them a very big boost. But, you know, hats off to Jack Leiter for making the adjustments. And not that you doubted that he could, but a lot of times that stuff's easier said than done. And it appears like he is really taken to the changes based on the small sample size of three AAA starts.
And Jonathan, another highly drafted, highly touted SEC pitcher who is off to a good start this year is Chase Dolander.
Yeah, I know everyone probably thought I was going to talk about Paul Skeens, but I'm not going to, although he's been ridiculous. Chase Dolander is interesting to me because, you know, he entered last spring, you know, at Tennessee as a potential 1-1 kind of guy and did not pitch as well as people thought he would compared to his sophomore year. So he, you know, he slid, quote unquote, to ninth overall. And listen, the Rockies have had a lot of difficulty developing pitching. And, you know, in some ways he kind of fell in their lap at the back end of the top 10. And the stuff was still good last year. And I think there were just some adjustments that needed to be made. And, yeah, we're talking two starts so far, but, you know, he's pitching in Spokane, and that's a hitting friendly place. He's had one home start and one road start. His first start, he went five no hit innings, and the second start, he gave up a run, but he's only given up four hits, so walked four, and he struck out 15 over his first 10 innings. So both the ERA and WHIP are under one. A very encouraging start. I think that if he gets, you know, sort of a good head of steam in high A, you're going to see him move up to Double A Hartford sooner rather than later. because the stuff says he should be able to move quickly. And it's just a question of him executing, and so far he's done that.
Don't look now, but a bunch of the Rockies' top pitching prospects are off to very good starts. Between Dolander, Sean Sullivan, Carson Palmquist, Jack Mahoney, all in the Rockies' top 20, those guys have thrown 41 and a third innings, have allowed just 7 earned runs combined, 27 hits, and have struck out 60 compared to just 13 walks. So promising start for Rockies pitching prospects there. All right, let's shift our focus to the draft. We are going to talk to Texas A&M's Braden Montgomery right after this, coming up on the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and as we promised, our special guest, Braden Montgomery of Texas A&M. Braden, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So we have had, in the past several weeks, we've had on Travis Bazzano, we've had on Charlie Condon, we've had on Jack Caglione, and can't pronounce his name right. And it seems like every time we have one of these guys on, we're like, one of the hottest hitters on the planet. And I think the same can probably be said about you. But one thing that I think can be said about you that we haven't said yet when talking to these guys is maybe on the hottest team on the planet, as far as college baseball goes, you guys are the unanimous number one team in the country right now, coming off a big sweep of Vanderbilt. You're raking, leading the nation in RBI, third in homers, third in total bases. You're playing in front of huge crowds. I saw you guys had the biggest crowd there in over 10 years. Is it safe to say that things are going about as well as you could have possibly hoped when you decided to go there?
Yeah, for sure. Things are going great. I mean, the guys on the team are just, they're unbelievable to be around. And so it just makes it that much easier to play with them. The guys like to enjoy themselves, and they like to keep it loose. And I think that's a big reason why we've been able to do what we do and to stick to our process. So it's been going really well for us.
Braden, anybody who listens to this podcast knows I'm a big SEC homer because I went to the University of Georgia. And
is insufferable is the word I look for.
I think I'm sufferable. But anyway, not only are you guys number one, but Arkansas is number two, Kentucky's number three, Tennessee's number four. There's depth beyond that. What has the competition been like in the SEC? I mean, obviously the Pac-12 is a good conference too, but I'm always telling these guys the SEC is the best conference in the country. How good has that competition been, and how much do you think it helps you get even more prepared for entry into pro ball?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I think just kind of like the main difference is how complete the teams feel. Like, obviously, in any conference, you can find superstars or guys that are standouts and really good, but it's just like it's hard to find holes in the lineups we play against each weekend just because guys have, or these teams have so much depth. And so it's like it's really hard to navigate that and really hard to not only win a series, but sweep. And so, yeah, that's kind of been the difference I've seen between that and in the years prior that I've played. But I think it's huge for getting ready to enter pro ball, just having not only to get past a starter, but to get past all the really good pins, all the really good arms they have in the pen. So, yeah, I think it does really well compared with pro ball.
Braden, I wanted to ask you sort of about your evolution as a hitter, since you started college. The power showed up right away, and that's never been in question. But it seems that each year you've kind of evolved more and become a more complete hitter. This year, I think you've taken it to another level. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen, your approach and how you do things at the plate to make you the sort of kind of complete hitter that teams like to consider at the top of a draft class?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just been a big thing of getting the experience under my belt and playing the game more often against these guys has kind of worked to slow down my mind and have me in the right mind space each time I step in the box. So I think that's the biggest part of that was it just feels like the approach is a lot more consistent. Like I'm not taking as many at bats to where I'm like fuzzy in the box and in my brain in terms of that. So yeah, I think the biggest thing has just been doing it more, playing in USA and playing against all these top talented guys. I think that's just been the biggest thing for me.
Hey, Braden, I read that you're a natural right-hander. You've displayed a lot more power from the left side, or I don't even know that you've necessarily displayed more power from the left side, but you've certainly hit a lot more home runs from the left side. But I read that your hitting coach said you actually have more power from the right side. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Honestly, I'm not sure which side I have more power from. I mean, I think I'm pretty even, but that was something I was really excited to come to A&M and experience was we've got a lot of lefties. And so in all of our inner squads, I was able to take a lot of right-handed at-bats because in the past, it's been difficult to kind of, I guess, find the consistency right-handed with so many at-bats in between each right-handed at-bat. Like I just wasn't seeing a lot of left-handed pitchers. And even so far this season, we haven't seen a lot. So it's also exciting to get to this back half of the schedule and see that we've got a lot more or see that it seems we've got a lot more lefties going in terms of starters and just everything overall. But yeah, it was really helpful to see all those left-handed pitchers in preparation for the season. And at that time, I was in a really good spot right-handed, so I'm excited just to see more of that.
Braden, how difficult was it to get acclimated to A&M? Like, it's interesting because in fall ball, Jonathan and I split up the draft. So I have Texas. You know, I also had Mississippi in high school. So you come to A&M and you have area scouts who haven't seen you before because different areas, you know, Mississippi, Stanford, whatever. And it was funny looking back because talking to area scouts in the fall, they're like, yeah, I know he's talented and you can see the bat speed, but man, he's, you know, there's some swing and miss here. You know, I'm, you know, not sure exactly what we have in Braden Montgomery. And now I'm talking to scouts and they're like, yeah, it's pretty obvious how good he is. And they're saying they think that what it might have been is that A&M's pitching staff is a lot better than people realized. And you guys are what, 32-4 now and have as good a pitching staff in the country. You know, Ryan Prager is going to go good. Other guys. Did you feel like you were struggling in the fall? Because I know the area scouts I talked to were like, I can see the tools, but I'm not quite sure about the bat. And now everybody's like, oh, I have no questions about the bat. I think A&M's pitching is a lot better than we realized now that we're seeing it play out.
I didn't think I was necessarily struggling in the fall. I also didn't place as much emphasis on it because I know it was the fall. So I wasn't really worried about hitting 500 and slugging 800. It was more of a focus on just seeing and getting acclimated to it. So yeah, I didn't feel like I was struggling. I wasn't worried or anything. And yeah, we really do have a really good pitching staff. There were no breaks at all in the fall. I mean, everyone was even throwing harder at that time. So I think the pitching staff definitely didn't give me a break for sure. But yeah, I didn't feel like I was necessarily in a difficult spot. I was just excited to be out here. The transition really wasn't all that difficult. I mean, the guys made it pretty easy. It's a really fun group, and so it was easy to just kind of hop in and enjoy being with them right away.
You saved the slugging over 800 for when it mattered. I mean, you're slugging 891 now. You should have picked a higher number for what you weren't aiming for. Speaking of throwing hard, you're a guy who has shown that he can throw hard from the mound. You're a two-way guy, which just always fascinates people. And you know, I think your college time on the mound has been intermittent and up and down. And so I was just curious because you've only thrown twice. And obviously you're having such a great year at the plate. We're all assuming that whoever takes you at the top of the draft is going to send you out to hit. Like, where are you in terms of letting go of pitching? Are you cool with just focusing on the hitting? Or are you, you know, getting in your coach's ear saying, like, I'm ready to take the ball whenever you need me to?
Yeah, well, it's kind of just whatever the coaches think is best to put us in a place to win. I mean, if our pitching staff needs or would like for me to help us out in that sense, then I'm all for it. But obviously, we've been going really well right now. And so whatever is working and whatever is keeping us winning, I'm all for it. But yeah, as far as that goes, I'm just kind of – I want to be a big leaguer. And so that's whatever way I can get there, I'm cool with it.
Hey, Braden, I wanted to kind of look back a little bit. I know that you've participated in quite a few MLB Develops programs, Breakthrough Series, Hank Aaron Invitational, Dream Series, I believe. Can you talk a little bit about those experiences and sort of what they've meant to you, how they've helped you, what you got out of them?
Yeah, those are some of my favorite baseball experiences for sure. I believe I started summer of 2019. Was my first Breakthrough Series event, and they're just unbelievable. I mean, it's definitely really cool to see so many Black players around the game, just because it's something that you never see. I mean, I go to all these tournaments, and it's just not as often that you see that. And so getting to experience that and play with guys like that, it was unbelievable. I mean, the energy that we had on the field and just hanging out all the time, it was awesome. Like, I couldn't keep myself from having fun. Just the way they do that, the way the coaches come back and they give back, like Marvin Freeman and Coach Collier, Coach Grissom, all those guys, it's great knowledge that they impart on the guys. And I think it really just it helps those guys to apply that stuff when they get back and fuel their drive to want to be in the big leagues even more. So I can't speak highly enough about those events.
You were also part, Braden, of the U.S. Collegiate National Team last year, and you got to play with almost everybody who's probably going to go up near the top of the draft with you. You played with Charlie Condon, you played with Jack Caglione, you played with J.J. Weatherholt. Travis Bazzano was not on the team because he's Australian, but you obviously played against him in the Pac-12. Probably the only top guy that I think you haven't played with or against is Nick Kurtz of Wake Forest, because he wasn't on the team because he had a shoulder injury last summer. Does any one hitter in that group impress you the most? Like, if you were breaking down these guys, who stands out the most? Because you've played with a lot of talented hitters.
Right. I'd probably say J.J. Weatherholt, just the way he's able to always put the barrel on the ball. It's pretty amazing. So he was definitely one that was really cool to watch and kind of watch his process and see how he goes about it.
Braden, this is usually the Jim Callis specialty question, but especially because the SEC is so stacked, and you mentioned the arms that you faced in the fall, and you've obviously seen plenty of good arms this spring, but we always like to know, like, who are the best arms that you've faced this year, or, you know, even going back to the Pac-12, if there are guys who are now in pro ball or whatever it is, but who are the guys that you've seen, maybe if you want to focus in on this year, who have really stood out and impressed you the most?
Honestly, from our own team, I'd say Chris Cortez, just with how his stuff has evolved. Because, I mean, I faced him in the Stanford regional last year, and it just was nowhere near what he's become now. And especially I think about his outing from Florida when I went back on Twitter and saw him on Pitching Ninja and just saw how gross his stuff was. I mean, a 89-mile-an-hour sweeper and a 99-mile-an-hour sinker, that is just – the movement profiles on both are just unbelievable. And so I'd say just watching him transform from, like I said, what he was in the Stanford Regional and into doing what he's doing now has been super cool. And I tend to not remember as many, like, opposing pitchers' names, just because when I look about what they've got, I just kind of look at the pitch profiles. I don't really look at as many names, but Chris is one that you can't really forget. It's hard to forget guys to 100. But yeah, he's been unbelievable.
That's Braden Montgomery joining us. And Braden, we want to thank you very much. I know you've got a midweek contest that you're preparing for tonight, and you guys are the newly anointed number one team. Congratulations on that, and good luck with the rest of the season. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. We will take a break, come back with more coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo. Thanks very much to Brayden Montgomery for taking the time out to talk to us today before they face Air Force tonight. So we got our college draft talk out of the way there. And now we move on to some high school draft talk. And Jonathan, as we mentioned in the open, recently was in North Carolina for the USA Baseball NHSI, National High School Invitational. I know that's an event that you've enjoyed for many years, Jonathan, and tell us how this year's edition went.
It was great. You know, looking on the surface at the amount of the top 2024 draft guys, it was not as robust as some years, but I actually thought that the brand of baseball, for the most part, was better than in some years. I think sometimes teams get to go because they have like a big name, but the team isn't as good. I thought the teams were really good. It is, first and foremost, a team tournament. You have to win 4 games in 4 days to win. Corona High School won it all for the first time. It was their first time going. They beat Orange Lutheran, which had won 3 times. But there were some really good performances. You know, the top prospects coming in performed well. I think a couple guys really helped themselves as well. So overall, it's a great tournament. And yeah, I think there have been 11 of them. You know, COVID interrupted it for 2 years. And I want to say I've gone to 9 of them, or at least 8. So I do enjoy heading to the National Training Complex for USA Baseball for this event every year, if possible.
I'm the anti-Jonathan. I've never been to the NHSI because it was often at the same time my kids were on spring break in, you know, during their school years.
That's no excuse,
and the one
Gals.
Year I was scheduled. I know. Well, the one year them. I was supposed to go.
Take them to the NHSI for spring break.
That's where a lot of kids are going to break these days.
That's right. We love the area. And I was going to say the 1 year I was supposed to go was 2020. Jonathan had some kind of conflict, so Jonathan could not go. And I was supposed to go in 2020.
Probably Passover. So. Passover is the thing that gets in the way.
So COVID prevented me. So I let Jonathan wrap.
Yeah, give us some
wax poetic about.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, the top prospect going in, and when we'll tease the mailbag question even more. He would be a candidate for what we're going to talk about is Bryce Rayner, the shortstop at Harvard Westlake, and you know he's gone from interesting to like absolute helium top of the draft kind of guy. This spring, over the summer, he was good. He's a two-way guy. I had some scouts who were thinking, you know, well, we're not sure about the hit tool, and maybe, you know, his upside on the mound is so tremendous. Maybe I'd rather have him pitch. He may take a big step forward there. He transformed his profile over the course of the offseason. He's gotten bigger, stronger, you know, left-handed hitting shortstop. Think Corey Seager, Colson Montgomery kind of vibe. He can definitely play short, and he hit everything hard. He had the top 4 exit velocities for the week. All of them were like around 107 miles an hour or higher. Went 7-for-13 overall. He just looked like a man amongst boys there. So he was by far the best player, and he's turned himself into a guy who, you know, we're working on our top 150 right now, and he's going to be in the top half of the first round, if not top 10 kind of range, not just because of the NHSI, but what he's been doing all spring. And then one other bat I'll mention is Burke Mabius from Bishop Gorman. That's in Las Vegas. That's where Joey Gallo went to school. He had a couple of homers, had an OPS over 1700, really high energy catcher. Probably strength over bat speed, but he performed and hit the ball really hard. And then a couple of lefties who threw well. One is Ethan Schiefelbein from Corona High School. They won it all. He kind of helped to get them going. He pitched day 2. A little bit of effort in his delivery, but he was up to 95 with the fastball. good vertical and horizontal break. He kind of manipulates his curve really well. I like him a lot, you know, but the ceiling is somewhat limited. And then Mason Russell from Castile High School in Arizona can really spin a breaking ball through the second no-hitter in NHSI history. That was in the first round. Command had been an issue in the past. He only walked two and he struck out 10. But the curve with the high spin breaking ball is really what stood out, that and his feel for pitching and his competitiveness.
All right. And Jim, we were going to segue right into our mailbag question and let you talk a little high school draft, but do we need to do an emergency podcast segment here? I don't know if you saw, but there's a report that the Astros are calling up
Joey Loprafita.
No.
Wow. Your favorite former pitching prospect.
Forrest Whitley.
Who's still technically.
Forrest Whitley.
Wow. Yeah, I think we need to talk about Forrest Whitley for a minute then. Is that true?
Yes, please.
I didn't see this at all. I didn't get a release. Are you guys monitoring Twitter while we're doing this?
Yeah, I slacked it.
Oh, too. I was preparing for the mailbag question. wow.
Yeah, I know, Jim, you've talked many times about the fact that as many struggles as Forrest has had, you've never seen them. You've only seen them good.
I'm expecting a call now from the Astros to, like, hire me, and like he will be guaranteed success. He's going back to the high school All-America game at Wrigley Field in whatever year he would have been in, and then he starts in the Arizona Fall League to the backfields of West Palm Beach in 2023. I've always seen multiple, you know, plus pitches, better than plus pitches. It's interesting. Without looking, what do you think his ERA is this year in AAA? Do you know?
Too late. I looked.
Okay. Jonathan, we'll let Jonathan play. Jonathan, what do you think his ERA is in AAA?
4.67.
12.
Ooh.
It's 12.
So I should have multiplied by three.
Yes. It's three innings, four hits, four runs, all earned. Three homers, which doesn't really play well in relief. Two walks, four Ks. But, yeah, I mean, I have no idea what to make of Forrest Whitley. I thought he was going to be in the big leagues in 2019. And here we are, what, 2024? But congratulations to him. I mean, between injuries and delivery issues and command issues, you know, you talked about how Jack Leiter's path to the majors was maybe not what we expected. Forrest Whitley's path to the majors was not what we expected. So, you know, I am shocked. I would not have come up with Forrest Whitley, who I don't even have on the top 30 anymore, because I frankly didn't know what to do with him.
All right. And now the aforementioned several times mailbag question that will allow Jim to talk some high school draft as well.
Thanks, Jason. The mailbag question comes from @prospects_1, BDE for big draft energy.
Well, I like that.
I like it too. What draft prospect has increased their stock the most in 2024? I mentioned Bryce Rayner, who's gone to sort of top of the first round, but he was a guy.
He was a guy, yeah.
He was a guy. So I have one, somebody else, but, you know, Who's in your neck of the draft that you think fits the bill for this question?
I've got two guys, because of course I do. But I'm going to give you hitter and pitcher, both high school guys. On the pitching side, it's Cash Mayfield, who's a left-handed pitcher.
It's a great name.
From Elk City, Oklahoma, which is also a cool town name. Cash was on my radar coming into the year, was not on the top 100. We actually had three Oklahoma high school players on the top 100. It's not a good year high school-wise across the country. It is a good year in Oklahoma, and I think Cash Mayfield may jump ahead of Owen Hall, Garrett Schull, and Carson Wiggins, who are all on the top 100 that we did in December. Really athletic, projectable, 6'4", 190-pound lefty. Been up to 97. He'll sit, you know, 90, 92, all the way to 95 throughout the game. Smooth delivery, repeats it well, a lot of strikes. Got a kind of a slurvy breaking ball. Maybe it's more of a curve than a slider. Change up with some fade on it. He almost hasn't had to use them. But I think, Jonathan, he's pushed himself into comp round discussion. Like he could go in the 30s. He's really had a great spring and he kind of checks all the boxes. And then on the high school position player side, it's a guy who's been famous for a while, but he's just had some injury issues. And that's Theo Gillen, who's an infielder at Westlake High School in Texas. He was, you know, famous early. I think if you'd asked Texas scouts when he was a freshman, they would have said this guy is going to be a first round pick. He was best hitter in the state, like in his class, identified early. And then he had shoulder surgery in 2022. He had a knee injury, didn't throw well on the circuit last year. So it was kind of hard to scout him defensively. He's finally healthy. He is the best hitter in the state. You know, I think it's going to be at least average pop. Runs fine. Arm hasn't come all the way back. So he's probably more of an offensive second baseman or, you know, maybe a left fielder. But I think he's more of an offensive second baseman. And I think Theo Gillen has pushed himself into comp round discussion as well. So those would be the two guys looking for guys who are not on our top 100 who I think have made the biggest jump this spring.
Yeah, I've got one more to add to that mix. We always love a pop-up guy who kind of seemingly comes out of nowhere. And for me in Florida, that's Kellen Lindsay from Hardy Senior High School, kind of in the middle of nowhere, Florida. One of the things that's been challenging is that the competition he's facing isn't all that good. But a lot of times with the high school guys, when they seemingly come out of nowhere, it's because they didn't play in the summer showcase circuit or were hurt, you know, or played poorly. Lindsay was hurt, and he also had been the high school's quarterback previously. This year he's one of those guys, Jim, who stopped playing football, and so the baseball has taken a really nice jump forward as he's focused on it. He is a premium athlete, at least a 70 runner. Some have 80. He's a tremendous athlete who should have a chance to play shortstop for a very long time. At very worst, he slides over to second base and is an easily plus defender there. He makes a lot of contact. He has a decent idea at the plate. He needs to get stronger, but some scouts think there's going to be some more pop to come. And so depending on who you talk to, he's somewhere in that comp range. He could go, back into the first round. There are scouts who, when comparing, last year was a good year for Florida high school shortstops. You had Arjun Namala, who went to the Blue Jays in the first round. You had George Lombard, first round pick. And you had Adrian Santana. And all three of them went in the top 31 picks overall. And it's not as good this year. And Kellen Lindsay, it belongs in the conversation with those guys just because of the upside and the athleticism. So that's my interesting guy who wasn't even on my like others list when we put together that top 100. Now we're talking maybe a first round pick.
Hey, Jonathan, I'm going to get us prepared.
Okay.
For day two of the draft, where we circle back to things. I was frantically during our hastily called emergency podcast section, trying to get on Synergy and figure out how well Forrest Whitley had been throwing. And it's kind of a mixed bag. He's averaging 98 miles an hour with the fastball, but he's only throwing 44% of them for strikes. Slider's been averaging 90. So velocity has not been a problem. And he is throwing the slider's getting a lot of swing and miss, but I don't know. I think the Astros are going to need to call me in to get his fastball control and command back on point.
We'll work on that. But for now, that's going to be a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Our thanks again to Brandon Montgomery from Texas A&M for joining us this week. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.